Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Beautiful people, welcome to this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. It is March 29th, 2021, and wow, what a weekend it has been, right? And I say it has been because it's a bit of an odd year for the NCAA tournament because usually, I mean, the rounds games would be in the bag and we will be talking about the Final Four during a normal year. But because of COVID-19, this is certainly not a normal year. So, we will know who will book a ticket to the Final Four with the Elite Eight games actually taking place tonight and tomorrow night. How about that, folks? So the Sweet 16 is in the books, and we can at least recap that. And it does include one college basketball team from this great state of Michigan. No, not Michigan State, of course, but the Michigan Wolverines. How about the Maize and Blue? I mean, just amazing what they have been able to do throughout the tournament, this being Juwan Howard's first run in the tournament, to sit here in the Elite Eight with the chance to possibly head to the Final Four is pretty remarkable. It is mind-boggling. You know, he won Big Ten Coach of the Year, and I don't see how you don't give him National Coach of the Year as well. But it's completely amazing. And, you know, I had a great time last night on Jack Ebling's Press Pass. You know, I'm a frequent guest on Press Pass on Fox 47 with Jack, and he always invites me to break down games. And we're gonna have to actually get Jack on Current Sports here very soon. We're always texting back and forth, especially during this time of the year, and chatting about, you know, the odds and, you know, the teams that are still left dancing. And I was on the airwaves last night alongside Jack and Tom Crawford being, you know, Blue Belly Tom, and the diehard Michigan Wolverine that he is. He covers all things Michigan Wolverines, and he was just ecstatic, as you can imagine, last night. But we were talking about this run by the Michigan Wolverines, and I was asked how this has come about. What is the difference from the way Michigan ended that regular season, which wasn't great? You know, they were like just below or just above 500, somewhere around there. They weren't lights out, even though throughout most of the season they had such an amazing, amazing run. And they weren't hitting their stride when you want to, so to speak. They sort of limped into the postseason. But it was like when you saw what occurred during the Big Ten tournament, that just has bled over now into the big dance. And you got to give Juwan Howard a lot of credit. You got to give his assistant coaching staff, specifically for me, Phil Martelli, a lot of credit. And these young players, man, they have really matured throughout the postseason. And this is in spite of not having one of their best players really the straw that stirred the drink for me in Isaiah Livers. They are doing all of this without Isaiah Livers, and now they sit in the Elite Eight with a chance on Tuesday night to book a ticket to the Final Four. Just unbelievably remarkable. Unbelievably remarkable, folks. And, you know, looking forward now, as we really break down how they're doing this, already they have exceeded everyone's expectations. Already, folks. And for me, how they've done this, being just the lone Big Ten team left here in the Elite Eight, and that's just sad. You know, again, I'm a results guy, and I will always say this until the Big Ten proves me wrong in this drought of 21 years of not having a Big Ten champion from the conference. Until that streak is broken, I don't want to hear about the Big Ten being the best conference in college basketball anymore. If Michigan continues to go on this improbable run and somehow, some way wins the NCAA championship this year, then I'll come back on here and I will personally eat those words. But look, man, to have nine teams in the Big Dance and to only have one left here in the eliteness of eight is sad. It's pitiful, you know, but if somehow they can get there and they beat Gonzaga and, you know, possibly play Baylor, I mean, that would be amazing. That's what I think, you know, if that's their road, if it's going to happen. But I think it's going to be Gonzaga and Baylor for all of the marbles come April 5th at 9 p.m. But I'll eat those words if that happens. But until then, you know, to have nine representatives from the Big Ten Conference and to have only one still standing is ridiculous. You know, Purdue losing an inexcusable first round game to 13 seed North Texas. I think about Ohio State having the same fate against Oral Roberts, a 15 seed. Illinois and Iowa both had embarrassing second-round routes by Loyola Chicago and Oregon, respectively. So, I don't want to hear the mess anymore. Big Ten being come on, man. You see right now, if you look at how things have gone, looking at the Pac-12 teams and how well they have done throughout this tournament, it is amazing. Teams like USC, teams like, you know, UCLA, teams like Oregon State. It's just amazing to me. Amazing to me. We need to reseed things a little bit, don't we? I mean, absolutely incredible what we have seen. And, you know, Michigan and UCLA, that's going to be a very, very tough matchup for the Wolverines. I was chatting with Tom Crawford in between our segments of recording, and he was asking me, you know, Al, what do you think is going to be the tougher matchup, because the game hadn't ended just yet. But he asked me what will be the tougher matchup between UCLA or Alabama for Michigan. And honestly, I said that Alabama would be the better matchup for the Wolverines, the easier matchup for the Wolverines, because I just really think that UCLA is a matchup problem for a lot of different teams, but they will be a matchup problem for the Wolverines tomorrow night. And Michigan fans would have much rather have seen the Crimson Tide than the Bruins right now. You know, I look at, you know, Jaime Jaquez. That dude is such a smart basketball player at his size who can do virtually just about anything on the basketball court. How can you shut him down? Right? And then Tiger Campbell at the point guard position. I think he's going to give Zach Smith some fits. Tiger Campbell is probably a tad bit of a better scorer than Zach Smith. A great facilitator. Zach Smith is also a great facilitator. So that'd be fun to watch those two duel. But I think Tiger Campbell gets the upper hand there just a little bit. You know, Johnny Juzang, and we all know about how great he has played throughout the tournament. And we saw what UCLA was able to do against Michigan State that kind of spearheaded this run that they are on right now. So I don't think this is going to be easy for the Wolverines, and I'll give you my thoughts and predictions on that matchup come tomorrow. But right now, I do want to appreciate what this Michigan Wolverines team has done. Defensively, they stymied Florida State yesterday. Florida State had absolutely no answers for that Michigan defense. I mean, everywhere they went, you saw a maize and blue jersey right there in the grill of the Seminoles. Fantastic. Clogging up passing lanes. Contesting shots. And if you look at that first half, I mean, that first half was just so shocking because I thought Florida State was actually going to win that game. But it was so shocking because I counted just three complete offensive run sets from the Seminoles that entire first half. Other than that, it was just like backyard basketball where you just get a ball to somebody and hope that they bail you out with a miraculous jump shot or some kind of drive to the lane or foul somewhere. That's all. It was just three. I just counted three offensive clean sets that were ran that entire first half. And from there, you just knew that the Wolverines were going to roll. Because they continued that momentum in the second half. It just blew my mind, man. The defense has gotten better. Brandon Johns has emerged as a very key factor for this team. Down low, Brandon Johns, I mean, he is your scrappy garbage man who can also score. You know, he'll get the loose ball if it clangs off the rim, get the rebound, and put it up for a layup. Or you can go to him, and he can create his offense now. He has been a pleasant surprise. And you know what? I warned a lot of people when I saw Brandon Johns in the Big Ten tournament. I warned a lot of people and said that, look, this dude is getting better. His confidence is going through the roof. Watch out for Brandon Johns. And I got to call him out. I love him to death because I got about like a handful of guys I text, especially around this time of the year, and we'll give each other our thoughts and we'll debate a little bit. And one of those guys is my guy, Anthony Iani, former Michigan State big man. And Ant and I, we texted during the Big Ten tournament, and I saw Brandon starting to pick up some steam, and I said, look, man, Brandon Johns can be a big factor for this team moving forward, and he is getting better. I am impressed. That's what I said. And he didn't believe me. He said, oh, no, if you get another physical big against him, he folds. He's overrated. And after, you know, because I shot him a text again, watching what Brandon Johns was able to do yesterday in that win, that 76-58 win against Florida State, and how big of a factor Brandon Johns was, shooting 50% from the floor, 14 points, tied for the highest scoring output for the Wolverines alongside Hunter Dickinson. You know, he just shot me a text saying, hi, my name is Anthony Iani, and I am a Michigan hater. So, yeah, basically admitting that, yeah, Brandon Johns Jr. and this Michigan team, they are a solid team, a very solid team. But Brandon Johns, the local kid from Lansing, man, you gotta give him his props, man. He has played very, very well, and he has proven to be a factor, a go-to factor for this Michigan Wolverines team. You know, since he has entered the starting lineup, he has been productive. And, again, a lot of this had to do with the fact that Florida State was just very, very bad as well. I mean, you know, really no ball movement offensively. They don't value the basketball. They turn the ball over so much. My goodness. I mean, I think they had reached double-digit turnovers just in that first half alone. They were better in the second half because they finished the game with 14 turnovers as a whole. But, man, those turnovers will bite you against really solid teams, and Michigan is certainly that, and then some. But they didn't value the basketball. Defensively, Michigan, I really think, got in their heads. And also Florida State shot the ball horribly from the three-point line. I mean, they couldn't hit anything. And this is a team that entered this matchup against the Wolverines that was ranked 16th in the nation in three-point efficiency. 16th, one of the top 20 best three-pointing shooting teams in the three-point shooting teams in the nation. And they put out that kind of a performance. 5 of 20 is what Florida State shot from behind the three-point arc. 5 of 20. That is a sizzling hot 25%, folks. So you combine the turnovers with bad three-point shooting, which is a go-to for Florida State, and you get a big fat L. And the Wolverines punch a ticket to the Elite Eight and possibly punch a ticket to the Final Four, depending on what happens tomorrow against UCLA. Again, I will go into the details of that matchup later on Tuesday's Current Sports. But very impressive stuff. And, you know, you look at the slate now for the Elite Eight. And I got to say, it was such an entertaining weekend. And, you know, but when we were on the airwaves yesterday for Press Pass, you know, I was also asked by Jack whether or not there were many people in this nation that nailed all 8 picks correct. And actually, I'm in a pick'em league where you pick round by round and you get points for picking round by round in the tournament. And I had picked every game correctly up until the Michigan game. So I got 2 wrong, and the 2 I got wrong were, of course, the Michigan game and also the what other game did I get wrong? It was the Michigan game and the UCLA and Alabama game. UCLA, a huge upset victory over Alabama. I got USC and I got Gonzaga correct, but yeah, those 2 games sandwiched in the middle of those 2, not so great. So, but I went on the airwaves of Press Pass and said that yeah, there were probably a lot of people out there that you know correctly guessed these games so far up until this point. And as I was talking, UCLA was giving it to Alabama. But it's not easy to nail these picks at all, folks, at all. And I really think that March Madness has livened up a bit for a lot of different people out there that have discovered online sports betting, as that has become, you know, now a legalized thing here in the state of Michigan and really across our nation. And, you know, it just adds a little bit of flair now to the casual sports fan, because you may have, I don't know, $5-$10, you know, riding on a certain outcome of the game. It has changed the view of the game for a lot of different people. It's changed that experience for a lot of different people. So, yeah, it's interesting though. You look at look at some of the games that happened over the weekend. You know, Sister Jean and Loyola Chicago, a very sexy pick for a lot of different people out there. I thought the party would end against Oregon State. I can't sit up here and say that I had some deep analytical reason as to why I believe that. I just kind of went with my gut. And don't get me wrong, Loyola Chicago, a fantastic team that a lot of people actually had winning the whole thing and shocking the world. But Oregon State, man, I just thought that they were the tougher team. They were the tougher team in that game. And both teams shot horribly, though. I mean, that game, especially if you watch the first half of that game, oh, my goodness. I mean, they were sitting just around like 20 points each. It was really, really bad, you know? In that first half alone, Loyola Chicago, I mean, they shot like 33%, you know? It was really, really bad. And I think that Oregon State, excuse me, in that game came with the mindset of, okay, Cameron Krutwig's going to get his, but we're going to limit everybody else. You know, in that first half, he was like 3 of 5 from the floor, very efficient. 14 points, but everybody else was limited. You know, in that first half, he was 3 of 5, Krutwig was, while everyone else was 1 of 18. So, hey, how about that? This is Oregon State's first Elite Eight since 1982. And this was actually the first meeting between Oregon State and Loyola Chicago since 1927, when Sister Jean was a schoolgirl. Isn't that incredible? First meeting since 1927 for Oregon State and Loyola Chicago. So, and then, you know, Baylor and Villanova, you know, Baylor's second half defense really was a difference maker in that game. I really think that it's Baylor, Gonzaga, well, in the correct order, Gonzaga, Baylor, and then everybody else here. I don't see either one of those teams losing until one of them has to lose when they meet each other in the national championship game. That's what I really think is going to happen. You know, I touched upon, you know, UCLA and just how dynamic they are. And that's a game that went to overtime. You know, in that situation, you always foul. If you're down by three, why even give the opposition a chance to possibly tie the game and throw that ball up behind the arc? Foul, send them to the line for a guaranteed two shots, and then just box out and rebound and hit your free throws if you're fouled again. Simple as that. But to allow a three to go up in that moment, you know, I am a firm believer now that you just have to foul and not try to defend. Simple as that. That's how I feel about that one. In other games, let's see here. Houston just made slight work of Syracuse in that dreaded zone. The zone finally went home, thank goodness. I'm so tired of Jim Boeheim just running the same zone every single year. But, hey, it works. I mean, sometimes they make deep runs in the tournament like they do this year as an 11 seed, and it works. I don't know how it throws so many guys off, but it does. I mean, just ask Tom Izzo, right? Arkansas, Arkansas and Oral Roberts, the Cinderella that is Oral Roberts, or I should say was Oral Roberts, is finally no more. That was a very good game that went down to the wire, a 72-70 final. Max Asmus, he is a fantastic player. He almost had a chance to send Oral Roberts to the Elite Eight, having a very good look on the right wing behind the arc that would have sent Arkansas packing. Very good look. Too good of a look, if you ask me. Too close for comfort there. I thought it was going to go down, but he misses it, just misses it, and Arkansas survives in that game. But Max Asmus, you'll be seeing Asmus play in the NBA very soon. He is an NBA caliber player. You know, Kennedy Jet Smith said it after the game, and that was sparked by a Trae Young tweet that said, "Man, I thought he was going to make that. That's a pro." Yeah, and he tagged Max Asmus. So yeah, I really think he is going to be a very solid NBA player. Some guys you can just look at and just tell, and Max Asmus being the leading scorer in the nation, and just looking at the ease in which he scores is quite remarkable. Really, quite remarkable. Then I touched on Baylor and Oregon State and what they were able to do. So tonight, folks, you can enjoy some tourney action, and two teams will be heading to the Final Four. We'll know two of the Final Four teams when the dust settles tonight, starting at 7:15 p.m. The first game will be Oregon State and Houston. Right now, the line reads Houston as a 7.5-point favorite. And then just around 10 p.m. at 9:57 to be exact, Arkansas will take on number one seed Baylor. And Baylor in that one is a 7.5-point favorite. Both games, of course, taking up place at Lucas Oil Stadium. So and then tomorrow, that's when you'll have USC and Gonzaga and UCLA and Michigan. Both of those games taking place at Lucas Oil Stadium, home of the Indianapolis Colts. All right. And both of those games tonight are on CBS. So 7 o'clock on CBS and then, you know, 10 o'clock basically on CBS. But it's been fun, man. This tournament has been so unpredictable. Look, we got a 12 seed that is still alive. we've got an 11 seed that is still alive. I mean, riddle me that. And the Pac-12 is proving that they have a solid argument that they are indeed the best college basketball conference in the game today, not the Big Ten. So unless, I guess, Michigan runs the table, continues to run the table, and wins the whole enchilada. I'm still not a believer in the Big Ten Conference. So what I want to do right now is hit our first break, and I want you to hear from Juwan Howard and also Franz Wagner as they talk about, you know, what led to that big dub over Florida State. 76-58 was the final there, and how they've been able to, you know, put together this amazing, amazing run. In terms of Wagner, he had 13 points. He's the brother of Mo Wagner, now in the NBA. But, you know, Franz Wagner was huge. He was, you know, right behind Johns and Dickinson in the scoring output. You know, Dickinson and Johns both had 14 points. Wagner had 13, but he also had 5 assists to lead the team in assists. And he also had 10 rebounds to lead the team in rebounds. No turnovers. Also, how about you throwing a block there, Franz? Just amazing. Amazing game from Franz Wagner. You'll hear from Franz as well as his head coach, Juwan Howard. You are listening to the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. What I want to do right now is I want to roll in a bit of the press conference from yesterday's Sweet 16 win as the Michigan Wolverines topped the Florida State Seminoles 76-58 to book a ticket to the Elite Eight, in which they will compete for a chance to go to the Final Four come tomorrow night against UCLA. Here is Franz Wagner, who had 13 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 block in that major win over the Seminoles. And then after you'll hear from after you hear from Franz, you'll hear from head coach Juwan Howard in his first NCAA tournament. This dude is in the Elite Eight. Pretty amazing stuff. Here they are.
Hi, Franz. If you could give some insight into the preparation for this game, you know, what coaches told you, kind of film study. It just seemed like there were some things and maybe Florida State might have an advantage in that just were not the case at all tonight.
I mean, I think everybody knows, I think they're like the tallest team in the country. So we know that they press a lot. So that's one thing we kind of went over in practice a lot. And then like I mentioned earlier, the switching and how we can attack those closeouts and, yeah, look at some weaknesses that they have, and on film, I think, like we always do, we analyze what the other team does, and then try to look how we can exploit it. And I mean, the scout team did a great job again. I think the coaches had a good game plan, and I know everybody that played watched film like they always do. And then, we also talked about what to do when they read the post, when they front the post and stuff like that. I think that's something we've seen all season with Hunter being so good down there. So those were probably the main things we talked about.
Thank you.
Our next question goes to Teo Mackey with umhoops.com. Teo, if you could please unmute and ask your question.
Yeah, Franz, just after the last, I guess, you know, year of not having the tournament last year, how rewarding is it now to be in this position after the performance you did today to get, you know, closer to your ultimate goal?
Yeah, I think it makes it that much cooler. I mean, like every team in America, I think, in the world, I mean, this year was tough with COVID and having to test every day, and obviously the last year being cut short. So, I mean, we wanted it that much more because of that, I think. But, you know, you got to give credit to all the teams that made it this far. I think that itself is a great accomplishment to stay healthy and keep testing negative and stuff like that. And I think this year has been extremely hard on everybody, especially mentally. But like I said, I think that makes it that much cooler to now be in the Elite Eight.
Next up, I have Bob Wojnarowski. Bob is with the Detroit News. Bob, if you could please unmute and ask your question.
Yeah, Franz, it seemed like did you make a concerted effort to attack more, attack the basket, even dishing out as well? And with this team right now, it doesn't seem like we know who's going to lead the way on any given day. It can come from anybody at any different time. Is that kind of the secret sauce to you guys right now?
I think it's been all season, to be honest. I mean, obviously without Isaiah, we have another weapon that's not out there, but I think we've seen all season that we have multiple guys that can score a lot of points, that are great shooters from the outside and are a threat offensively. I mean, for myself, I think I always try to attack the basket, be aggressive. But like I said, I think all that only happens when we move the ball and don't dribble too much, and that's when really everything opens up.
Our next question comes from Brendan Quinn. Brendan is with The Athletic. Brendan, if you could please unmute and ask your question.
Hey, Franz. I know you have experience playing with older teams based on your pro experience back home. And I just wonder if you can kind of explain what it's like when there's older groups like that. And if this team's kind of collective age and experience is showing itself in this tournament run and navigating Isaiah's injury?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, with experience, I think there also comes confidence to kind of adjust to new situations. So I think with B. Johns, you can see that I mean, from the first game really to Ohio State game, I think he played really well there and hasn't stopped since. So, I mean, but that's kind of been our identity all year, that next man up mentality and being confident out there. No matter what your role is. And I think being an older team, I think that shows in those games when you maybe you give up a run or something like that, and then you find a way to score a couple easy ones or get a couple important stops to then make a run of your own. I think that mental toughness, I think, is getting challenges this tournament especially, but it has been all season.
Next up, we have a question from Devin with Wolverine Sports. Devin, if you could please provide your full name and ask your question. Thank you.
Devin Trevetti, Wolverine Sports TV. Hey, Franz, talk about how you had 5 assists and how are you guys were able to move the ball so well against such a big team like FSU, 19 assists versus just 10 for FSU. How are you guys able to move the ball against such a big team?
I mean, I'd like to give the coaching staff some credit. I think We have some good plays that really put us in good positions out there. And then, I mean, like I said, we basically knew how they were going to play us all game with fronting the post and switching everything. So we kind of knew what to expect and did that in practice. And then I think we did a really good job, like I said, of not allowing them to speed us up and just dribble against the switches. So I think that's how we got moving and got them to move and to adjust to us. And then we attack their closeouts, and that's really when they pressure so much and we can attack the paint. That's really how I got my assist, I think, today. And, I think that's when good things happen for us.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Orion Fang with the Detroit Free Press. Orion, if you could please unmute and ask your question.
Hey, Franz, I was wondering, between the final seconds of the LSU game and tonight's game, what impressed you the most about Juwan's coaching and anything he taught you guys this past week?
I mean, just the way he can lock in on every single game. I mean, it's really easy to lock out during this week where you're just in the hotel. And I think he finds a good balance of making sure that we relax. But once the game starts, we're all ready to go. And then I think the confidence part of it, before basically every game, he tells everybody to shoot, even if we missed the last one. And I think you can see that out there on the court, that people are really confident out there and just confident and comfortable within their role out there.
Well, Franz has developed, and he has gotten better each and every year, and he's only been here for 2 years. It's been a joy to coach, and I know my staff will agree. A guy that has a high IQ, high ceiling, loves basketball, a grinder. And today the impact that he has on the game, just like his teammates, was extremely effective with what he had, with having the ball in his hands and also being on the defensive end.
All right. Our next question this evening comes from Brendan Quinn with The Athletic. Brendan?
Hey, Juwan. When it comes to dealing with this group, you know, just the amount of guys that you have who are, you know, 22, 23, like it's an older team. And I just wonder for you being able to execute a game plan or just being able to communicate things like that, just what it's like being able to coach a team that kind of has that as a commodity that a lot of other groups don't have.
Well, I just wanted to correct you. You know, we have Hunter Dickinson and Franz Wagner who are very young. And those two guys are, you know, a starting lineup. And it's been, you know, great to, you know, to coach all the guys, whether it's, you know, upperclassmen or underclassmen. Our two younger guys has a high IQ, and it's been, you know, beautiful just to learn from them just as much as our seniors. But, you know, we're grinding, man, and we're doing it collectively. And it's beautiful just to see the development that's happening before our eyes.
Our next question comes from Ted Gutkin. He is with the Michigan Daily. Ted?
Hey, Juwan. You guys had 11 offensive rebounds and 17 second chance points. Can you talk about the work you guys were able to do on the offensive glass tonight?
Well, yes. It was based on effort, energy, and toughness. You know, our guys came with the mindset. We talked about it, you know, leading up to the game. We showed it on film. We also talked about it before the game about we have to attack the offensive glass. We can't sit back on our heels and leave it untouched. Shot goes up. Let's go. You have the habits of, you know, transition defense. If the numbers advantage, we have two guys that's going to be back. That's going to, of course, communicate and try to stop a layup. I just love the effort that our guys brought and the energy and the grit.
Next up, we have Andrew Kahn with MLive.com. Andrew, if you could please unmute and ask your question.
Hi, Juwan. Franz spoke about the confidence you and the coaches, you know, give the players. I guess, can you speak to the balance of, you know, making sure your players are aware of what the opponent does well while still giving your players confidence that they can handle it, you know?
Well, why not give them confidence? That's what we're here for, to empower these young men who's put in a lot of hard work and effort each and every day in practice, games. If you break their confidence, then they will not be able to go out there and compete at a high level. You know, the trust is earned not only just from the players but also coaches. You know, we have to earn their trust. And so with all the work that we put in practice, you know, we see what our guys provide from a skill level, also being neck up, and then also the hard work they bring in with the energy and effort. So the trust and the belief is there on both sides. That's a part of our culture, a key word, trust.
Thank you.
Next question this evening comes from the Detroit Free Press. We have Orion Tsang. Orion?
Hey, Juwan. Florida State switches a lot of screens, which I feel like is something that you guys didn't see all that often in the Big Ten. What did you make of your team's ability to handle that tonight on offense?
I didn't hear the first part of your question. Can you repeat it?
Florida State switches a lot of screens. What did you make of your team's ability to handle that offensively?
Screens? What? Repeat that? I don't understand what you said.
Florida State switches a lot of screens.
Oh, switches. Okay, I didn't hear that one. Yeah. Switches. Yeah, thank you. Yes, they do. But we've seen some of that in the Big Ten. You know, Rutgers switch, you know, ball screens. Maryland switch. They do a lot of switching. But you know, in the tournament, we also saw it versus LSU. They do a lot of switching. But, yes, it's challenging when you have, you know, a team that's have length that also can switch one through five. But our guys did a great job of handling it. We practiced it all week, and it was great to see the, you know, the how they applied it on the floor.
All right, next up we have Ethan Sears with UMHoops.com. Ethan, if you could please unmute and ask your question.
Juwan, I'm wondering just defensively, what did you try to stress to everybody coming in? How did you think the team executed?
You said defensively or offensively?
Defense.
Our defense has been one of our staples of our identity as far as on the offensive end. We've had habits on how we've, you know, developed it last year when I first arrived. And then, you know, when we returned to the campus in June, first thing that we met as a staff, and then also the first meeting when we were able to have our first official practice, we talked about how we're going to be a better defensive team. And a lot of the drills that we worked on was based on developing that defensive prowess, where we can, of course, be disruptive on the ball and then off the ball. So if you look at, you know, the field goal percentage, yes, we held them to 40% from the field and also held them to 25% from the free throw line. It was great defensive effort.
Next, we have Connor Brennan. Connor, if you could please identify your affiliation for coach and unmute. Thank you.
Connor Brennan, the Michigan Daily. Juwan, a lot was made about Florida State's size coming into this matchup. So how are you guys able to kind of neutralize them in terms of, you know, banging down low in the post?
Yeah, we heard it all week. Yep, sure did. And we did a really good job of preparing for it. Yes, you cannot duplicate it in practice because you just don't have that, you know, Florida State roster. But it was great just to know, you know, as far as our guys buying into, and as the guys I'm speaking of, our scout team, are really watching film and studying Florida State's offense and the players' strengths. And when it came to preparation, I was just so proud how the scout team really bought into preparing us.
Next, we have John Borton. John, if you could please unmute and identify your affiliation for coach. Thank you.
Coach John Borton, the Wolverine Magazine. 8 teams left after tonight. Was there more celebrating going on or more, hey, we're not done yet in the locker room?
One game at a time. You know, yes, we can celebrate tonight, but tomorrow – we're looking forward to our and preparing for our next opponent.
All right. Our next question is Chuck Culpepper. Chuck, if you could identify your affiliation for coach and ask your question.
Yeah, Coach Howard, this is Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post. Through the years, now and then, we've seen teams that had great seasons, but a big blow near the end of it, like the one you took. Could you describe what it is like to try to adapt to that when there's not much time left to adapt?
What blow are you speaking of?
The injury, Isaiah.
Well, we don't make excuses here at Michigan. We feel so sorry for Isaiah with the injury. During any time of the season, when a player go down with an injury, you know, it's very unfortunate, and you feel and your heart breaks for that player. Isaiah, all the hard work he's put in senior year, and, you know, get to a point where end of the season, injuries you cannot control. But our guys band together like brothers, be there for their brother to lift them up and keep his spirits. And he's been amazing on the sideline as far as with his energy and keeping guys engaged and being another coach out there for us. But it's great to see that other guys have, you know, stepped up. And it's been collectively as a group where guys have stepped up with his absence.
All right, again, Juwan Howard and his star guard in Franz Wagner as they talk about what it's like, you know, moving on for a chance to go to the Final Four, being in the Elite Eight. Pretty awesome stuff. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, I'll put a bow on this Monday edition of Current Sports by commenting on a few weekend winners for you. And I've got really one big one. We'll take a break from March Madness, and I want to go to the fight world for my one big weekend winner. We'll be right back, folks. right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I want to send you guys on home here by taking just a brief break from the March Madness, and I want to have a weekend winner for you guys when we look at the weekend that was, and I bring to you which athlete or which team really won big over the weekend. And I've got one major one for you guys because, in the midst of watching, all of the March Madness action on Saturday night, I also had an eye closely on the Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou fight. Heavyweight fight, Stipe Miocic, one of the best mixed martial artists that the sport of UFC has ever seen. And this was actually a rematch because Stipe Miocic actually beat Francis Ngannou, who hails from Cameroon, 2 years ago, I believe. So this was a rematch. And Ngannou, who is so massive, I mean, this dude looks like he is carved out of stone. This dude looks like he could star in the first, two Rocky movies. I mean, this dude is so cut up, so physically intimidating, and he made slight work of Stipe Miocic and knocked him out in the second round, and he is now UFC's heavyweight champ. Amazing. And they had video on his hometown out in Cameroon, and they were just going crazy. And now, for the first time ever in UFC history, I mean, we're looking at three champions who are African-born. How amazing is that? Three African-born champions in the world of UFC, folks. With Francis Ngannou from Cameroon, you've got also two brothers from Nigeria in Israel Adesanya and Kamaru Usman, the Nigerian duo. Pretty awesome stuff, and I have to tip my cap to both of them. All three of them, excuse me. For doing what never has been done in UFC history. Hashtag Proud Africa. Africa has now three champions. And I can just only imagine what that does, for the little ones out there watching, Usman, the last Stylebender in Adesanya, and also Ngannou. And how that may inspire a young African kid out there watching this to take up UFC. Maybe this continues to be a thing. I don't know. But, gosh, are they all three amazing, amazing fighters. Despite the fact that, Adesanya, he's actually just coming off a loss. But still, this is so, so amazing. And for Ngannou, he wants to take on the big dog and arguably the greatest fighter that the sport has ever seen in John Jones. And if that fight happens, it will be the biggest UFC fight in the sport's history. Everybody's going to watch that. I mean, we're talking the likes of like Ali Frazier. This is the equivalent of Ali Frazier in the world of the UFC. All right, folks. Well, that will do it. Again, I hope you guys enjoy tonight's Elite Eight action. Again, Oregon State and Houston at 7, and then just around 10 o'clock, you'll have Baylor and Arkansas going at it. We'll see you on the Tuesday edition of Current Sports as we recap those two matchups, and we, of course, will preview UCLA and Michigan. Have a great rest of your Monday, and as always, be easy, people.